The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi guys, and welcome to the DC Comics Panel 2019 Denver Pop Culture Con. You know, before I took this panel, I heard a rumor that the DC fans are not only the loudest and rowdiest in the building, but they also have the best questions. So guys, do not disappoint me today, okay? We're still waiting on a couple panelists, but that doesn't really matter because you know what? I have Steve Orlando and Babs Tarr right up here. If you guys keep that up, I will love you forever, I promise you that. So thank you very much. But I want to start with Steve's instruction. What are you guys working on now in D.C., and what can our fans expect from you?
Or in life. So I'm doing if you somehow don't know me, I wrote Midnighter, I wrote Supergirl, I wrote Wonder Woman, Justice League of America. I wrote a crossover with Gerard Way called Milk Wars between Justice League and the Doom Patrol. Thank you for that. And right now I'm doing, and then I did a Batman Shadow crossover with probably one of my favorite people to work with, Riley Rossmo. And when we were wrapping that up, we said, what are we going to do next? And that is how my current book, Martian Manhunter, came to be. And we're on issue 5 of that now. It is, I'm pretty happy to say, I think the best thing I've ever done. It's the most innovative work Riley's ever done. And for you guys, it's the deepest dive into Mars and into like alien culture that DC's ever published. So we're giving you Weird, we're giving you Excited every month. And as for what's next, you'll find out in September solicits. But I am probably going back to Gotham for September. It's some places you guys won't be expecting. So keep an eye on that. And also, I should just say, Batman Secret Files, something I worked on. It's out, I think, next month. Unreal to me. I did a story with Eduardo Risso, who is a goddamn legend. And it's essentially Saw with Batman. So be prepared. I can't even believe I got to work with him. Very, very proud of that story.
It's Batman Jigsaw.
Well, you'll have to see. So that's out very soon.
Awesome. I'm not a writer, so mine's not going to be as nearly as long as that. But I worked on Batgirl for DC Comics, Batgirl Birthside, and for 3 years. And then I did a few covers. I don't have anything new coming out with them, but I do have an Image comic out called Motor Crush, Volume 1 and 2, and then we're working on Volume 3 right now, and I'm announcing like a new comic with a video game that's going to be announced soon, but I can't say yet, so that's always really fun. But look out for it, because it's going to be really cool, and I see some stuff wearing that stuff in the room right now. That's my sneak. That's my hint. That's all you get. Oh, and I have a cute show on Critical Role where I teach them how to draw. So if you want to learn how to draw your D&D character or characters or faces in general, it's called Pup Draw. So check it out, and I think we'll have season 2 coming up soon. So, yeah.
From the back, Greg Capullo and Andy Kubert, gentlemen.
Good.
Oh, nice to see you.
You too.
Greg and Andy, not to put you on the spot, but we just asked Babs and Steve about what they're working on currently. I'd like to ask you the same question.
I'm working on Babs and that guy. No, I'm working on The Last Night on Earth. It's, anybody pick up the first issue?
Yeah.
Yeah? Quite a few of you. Did you like it?
Yeah.
Lie to me if you didn't, okay? Yeah. But always remember, if you don't care for it, it's all Scott Snyder's fault because he's the writer. Okay, so.
I use that line all the time.
I helped somebody. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's our last Batman story, and that's, you know, that we began at Court of Owls. So make sure to pick it up. This is the bookend. This is the period at the end of our sentence. And you're in for a wild ride. That first issue is just a warm-up. So enjoy.
Wow.
You can clap.
I'm just finishing up. I hope you guys have seen it, but I don't know how many have. The Superman Walmart stuff. Have you guys seen any of that? Exactly. Nobody. Exactly. But they're reprinting it for the direct market, so you guys will see it this summer. But anyway, I'm wrapping up two more issues. Tom King's writing it. It's great stuff, and I hope you guys see it. And that's it. And then I got a couple projects after it lined up, and Batman stuff, huh? But nothing's totally set yet.
Listen,
so.
I'm just going to ask you politely to like me better than Andy, okay? When he does his Batman.
Oh, the first issue was awesome. Mate.
Oh, thanks, man. I break stuff wherever I go.
Steve, I know you're working on Martian Manhunter now, firmly entrenched as the JLA's conference call, if you will, the best utility player in comics. How do you establish that character away from how he is entrenched as being a team player on the JLA?
I mean, you, much like any other book, you have to show people why he is interesting and unique on his own. You know, with Martian Manhunter, it's sort of Martian Manhunter year one. It's also year 100,000 years ago on Mars. But we're getting him to the place where he's everything that you see. We're getting him to the place where he is that person who has overcome the tragedy that they underwent on Mars, and he's found a way to live openly and be who he is. Because to me, the core of that character is he can look like anyone, but he chooses to be this 8-foot-tall green alien and say that I'm both part of this world, but I'm not of this world, very clearly. You know, and we're getting him to that place. We've seen that he's been taking the easy road, living as Detective John Jones, someone who he sees as a better man than he was on Mars, a better person. And it's now in this series time for him to sort of reckon with those things finally, save the town of Middleton, which, you know, is in Colorado, so it's especially important for this con. Although ours is a little different. We took one of the D's away from Middleton because ours is a little stranger. And we have to get him to that place. We have to get him to that place where he feels comfortable in the greater community so that he can be that for the Justice League. Because he has the strength, but what we're really giving him is the fortitude and the pride that you see in his present-day version. And it's a journey like it is for any of us. That's the heart of that book, is showing how he goes from that person who lost everything, truly lost everything, and honestly failed at his job as a manhunter whose broad job is to protect other Martians, to the person that we know is steadfast and the shoulder that even these other gods in the Justice League cry on.
Yeah, you guys are allowed to clap. Babs, there's no mistaking your work on Batgirl. I would call it an iconic stamp on the character. How much freedom did you have?
Or her unique
design?
Fashion sense. Yeah. She's always styling and profiling.
I am wearing like the coolest shirt ever today.
Well, let's not forget the earrings either. I mean, it's always, she's setting trends.
Thanks.
That's it.
yeah, I mean, that's how I got that job. I had never done comics before, Batgirl, and I really leaned into my passions, which are like fashion and like fun, confident, sexy lady drawings, and it just happened to fit the story that the guys were trying to tell, Brendan and Cameron, and that's what got me the job. Like, I don't know how else someone has never done comics before gets to instantly draw a Batgirl for DC Comics. That was absurd. So follow your heart. You never know what'll happen.
Were the combat boots your idea?
No, Cameron had those. He had this, like, sketch, and she had like the tights and the boots and the snaps on her cape, but I knew the cuts that leather jackets for ladies needed, and his was kind of boring, so but the rest of it's so good. But I added like a bunch of design lines to the jacket, and I added like a snap to her neck, and he had her hair up. I put it down. I added some earrings, kind of like, because like you're a young girl, like you're gonna have like your little details and stuff. So yeah, we collaborated on that, and I'm very proud of it.
You should be. It's excellent.
Thanks.
Greg, Batman has the most iconic stable of villains in comic history. You got to help create the Court of Owls, which stands among the Joker, the Riddler, and all of those villains that we love. How much input did you have on that? And walk me through a little bit of that creative process of the court.
Well, I mean, you know, everything starts with Scott's writing, obviously, you know, and I just want to say, it's not just because we're really close friends or anything, and, you know, I think it's one of the most genius things that's been contributed to Batman in a long time, because Batman is so grounded and thinks, you know, he understands Gotham and nobody knows it better than he does. And for Scott to inject this thing where the court has been under his nose and it's been there for 400 years or something like that, if I recall, to unseat him in that way, to me, was just brilliant, you know? So, I mean, I got to just give most of that credit to Scott. I mean, that's just a genius idea, in my view. And but then he had, you know, his ideas. Everything starts with a seed, you know? And so he's talking about a plain, simple mask, you know, where you just see the eyes, something creepy. And so then, you know, my job is then to review different owl pictures, you know, and get inspired. I would say he had a pretty clear vision for the actual bland white masks, but the Talon, that was pretty much, you know, a lot of that. It was just my creation. And, you know, I don't know how I do stuff. I just try and get the vibe. So you know, I'm thinking Talon and owls, I'm thinking birds and claws and all that stuff. And so, you know, the seams I put, if you look at the seam lines on, like, the original Talon and stuff, you'll see, you know, the feeling of feathers. You know, they're not actual feathers, but you can see the vibe and the flow. And I just try and add those little elements in to bring that flavor in. I don't have a formula. I don't have any magic powder or anything like that. I get the ideas. I hear what he's trying to do, and I just do a few sketches and show them to him, and he says he loves them or he hates them, and if he says he hates them, I'll go look at it again, and then he says I love them, and then which has happened. And so, yeah, I have a lot of visual input, and sometimes, you know, not just with the owls, anything that we co-create that is new is he'll start with his seeds of, like the Batman will last. Maybe we don't see his eyes. You know, he'll say something like that to me in a really big smile and really dark and metal. And so, you know, with that, you go, what does that conjure in my head? And so I just sit down and start sketching and see what comes out. It's as magical for me as it is when you're a little kid and you have no ideas. You just get your crayons and you start doing like this and it opens. I mean, so usually my first idea is the one that comes out. And so Scott gives me those little seeds and I just water them, and what pops up is what pops up, you know. So
what about editorial? Pushback
with editorial? I've gotten pushback, but not really with any character designs. I got a lot of pushback for the cover one for Metal. They really didn't want me to do that cover. And because they're boring and they don't want to do cutting edge stuff. So I know what they were after, right? And it's the same cover that we've all seen a zillion trillion times. And that's the Star Wars movie poster cover, right? It's another dramatic upshot and all the heroes. And you go, yeah, I know you want that, right? Because it works, and that's why we've seen it a zillion trillion times. So for 3 days, you know, I produced a few of those, and I didn't want to show them because for 3 days I go, how can I go at this from a different angle? And I was so proud of myself that I came up with this. It's Metal, and I arranged the characters to form the horns, and I was like, oh, my God, finally, come up with an idea that's outside the box. And they go, oh, you can't do that. And I was pretty upset.
Stay in the box.
Yeah, we want you in the box. And I said, listen, you pay me all this money, and you tell me, you know, you want me to come up with, you know, new ideas and, you know, push the envelope. I go, but right now you're like Decca Records turning away the Beatles. Oh, that's a new sound. We don't know about that. You know, now, you know, so I go, you don't establish anything new and exciting by going over the same trail over and over. Does that trail work? Yeah, that's why it's a beaten path. But you don't get anything fresh by staying on that path, by playing it safe all the time. So I fought about it, and Jim Lee actually butted in and said to Dan DiDio, he goes, if an artist feels this strongly about something, you just got to get out of his way and let him do it. And so then the thing began to be right. Yeah, well, because Jim was in it, right. Yes, Jim Lee. Jim Lee, everybody. Come on, Jim. I didn't make anybody work. So, but anyway, Jim was in the trenches as an artist, so he understands.
He knows.
Right, so he knows. So he knows. So anyway, he let me go through, and then they were going, oh, people aren't going to understand. I go, listen, the smart kids in the room will always get it, and they'll explain it to the dumb kids. So just let it go, right? And I'll just tell you a behind-the-scenes bit. So after I did this thing, which I was so proud of, I realized after it was all finished that I'd neglected to include Aquaman. So I was like, oh, damn. So that's why you see Aquaman's trident as a tattoo on the wrist. Because that was like, oh, that's how I'll get him in there. It's a wrist tattoo. That's so metal. You know, so, that's how we solved that problem in the end. So anyway, yeah.
Andy, I've been a fan of yours for a very long time.
As we all have.
Thanks. Thank you.
I can normally pick up when a piece is yours, but on Dark Knight 3 Master Race, when I looked at the art, I knew you had drawn it, but right. I saw a lot of influence from Frank Miller's art, too,
of course.
On yours.
Right.
Talk to me about how you put your own stamp on something that is iconic as the Dark Knight.
You know, all of us grew up with Dark Knight, you know, getting into the business. It all really influenced us very much. So when I first started on that, and I'm staring at my drawing board, and I know you've gone through this many times, you stare at that blank page, and you have no idea what to do or how to approach
it. Only happens to him.
Yeah. So you just sit there and you go, screw it. I'm just going to go do it. And that's what you see is the way it came out, basically. A lot of it, when I was first starting out, you know, I would do the layouts first. And I wanted Frank to go over the layouts. I wanted to make sure that we were on all the same page. And when Frank went over layouts, he would tell me a couple key things that really just rang home. And I went back and I actually redrew a lot of the pages after I had talked to him. He told me one thing. He goes, you got to really keep in mind is your negative space. He goes, use the negative space that was really successful in his original Dark Knight stuff, and he used it a lot in Sin City. And he showed me where in a couple places where I could incorporate that. And I was like, I pulled back on it, you know, and I was like, I want to swear, but there's little kids here. I was like, wow, that really works out well. And that took the whole tone, took me through the whole series. You know, it really helped out a lot. But as far as, like, doing it on purpose, like, aping Frank, no. I wasn't doing that. No, this is just the way it came out. And a lot of it, too, is Klaus inking it. You know, a lot of that final look came through was with Klaus.
I imagine part of it's also the storytelling. The script, right?
Probably. The script and the pacing. But
right.
Brian wrote the scripts on him. But his pacing...
They
did. It was from Frank's plot, and they both got together and plotted everything out. And then Brian went back,
right.
And he wrote up the scripts on
gotcha.
It.
Gotcha. So Brian, I spoke then when I said script. Plot.
Right. It was very much a collaboration between those guys because mm-hmm. Brian was flying into New York to meet with Frank all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was just very much a collaboration. But Brian's scripts were pretty tight. I would interject a lot of my stuff in there. Like there was one scene in the first issue where Carrie, and you didn't know it was Carrie yet, but she's getting beaten up by cops. And Brian just wrote, hey, I just want to have it flash between Carrie getting beaten up, flash between the cops, and, you know, I'm going to leave it up to you what to do. So that, I kind of dug into Frank's Sin City stuff, you know, to see the pacing, and, you know, that helped me out through that part of it. But to get back to your original question, that's what happened just came out. It wasn't by choice. It was just how I saw it. That was it.
I want to go to you guys. You guys have at least one question, right? Put your hand up. I'll point to you. Let's ask these guys some questions. This is your chance. Right there.
Well, I never think how I'm going to pull it off. I mean, you know, it's just what I've been doing for a lot of my life. How it actually, the pitch came, me and my wife were visiting Scott at his house. And I had gone off at the time to do Reborn with Mark Millar, and I will always say Millar because it's spelled that way, and I think it sounds cooler. So keep your Miller to yourself. Thank you very much. And so he was trying to plan what to do when I came back. And he goes, I want to welcome you back because you're sort of like the metal dude. And so I go, I got this great idea. And they'll be like, Batman with battle axes. It's cool, right? It's cool. And Joker dragons, right? And so that's my Scott Snyder soft cuddly. and when he said all that stuff, I was just going, Batman with battle axes and Joker dragon, I'm in. So then I get the scripts, and they're just getting more and more escalated. Every script gets crazier and crazier. And no point do I go, you know, certainly things are more labor-intensive, but nothing that intimidates me to say, how will I do this? You know, we're trained on how to do it. It's just, you know, it's the time and labor that goes into different ideas. But, no, I was just excited. I knew it was great, and every script made me more excited to continue. So, everybody like metal? All right. Once again, even if you don't, lie to me, please. Thank you. Why? Thanks. Glad you liked it. Oh, come on.
Yeah. Don't be shy, guys.
It could be what we ate for dinner. Anything.
I've got one for Max. I absolutely fell in love with your really stylized look when with Batgirl. I'm wondering if there's any characters you haven't drawn that you would like to put on in DC.
Oh, I would love to do like a Sirens book. I think a bunch of bad girls would be so fun to draw and like right up my alley. I've gotten to do a couple like covers and like inside inserts, like covers and stuff, but I would love to draw that.
Yeah. What are my favorite what?
Variants.
You're speaking of variant covers?
More so like the Brown Batman or the Batman the Last.
Oh, well, which of the evil Batman was my favorite? Well, based on popularity, I have to say the Batman the Last, right? Because I guess, oh, thanks. And I guess, right, I think my second favorite maybe is Red Death. Thanks. Come on, you can make that. No, but I'll tell you why, because, again, going back to design, so why I like that one is because, all right, so basically he's the Flash, right? So the problem solving that goes into it, so, we, you know, obviously Flash has a lightning bolt because we all know lightning's fast as lightning, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, you don't want to run over that exact same road, as I was saying earlier. So I go, what other symbols of speed can I make, you know, can I use to spell that out with his character? And so I was thinking more like racing cars and jet fighters and stuff. So that's why you have like all these fins and spoils on them, because those were other elements that I relate to as going fast. So that's how I adorned him. And plus it looks very metal, right? It looks all very sharp and dangerous. Like if he runs by you, he's going to slice right through you. So that was so I'd say that was one of my other favorite next to Batman Who Laughs.
And yeah.
The art style, you can tell it's you, but you can also tell it changes.
Yes.
I'm curious if there was a time where you worked on a character or a story and it changed you and it changed how you approached how you draw.
Definitely Dark Knight. Definitely Dark Knight did a lot, yeah. When I approach a project, I don't make it. You know, it's nothing's intentional, you know. It's just the way I see it and the way I go into it and the way I feel it should be done. You know, it goes with, Origin 1602, which were kind of similar, but even those were a little bit different. The Batman stuff, you know, I guess, you know, you could say it all depends on what's influencing me, too, and what I like. It's just how I see it.
It's that, and like, for instance, because I get the same question a lot, right? So if I hired you to do My Little Pony, it's not going to look like, any, you know, your Batman stuff. It can't.
Exactly.
So the subject matter and story definitely influences the style of an artist. As I said, you know, everybody go, oh, you're so gritty on Spawn. Why does it look like that? Well, if I drew My Little Pony, would you expect it to look like Spawn? Well, you know. So that's the same thing. So that's why, of course, you see Andy Kubert. That's his heart and soul and all his knowledge and years of practice that comes out of his pencil and the way he feels, and as he said, and what's influencing me at that moment in time. But, of course, he's a professional, so he lets the story and the characters kind of guide him down that path.
I think one of the thing that didn't influence me the most was the Damien thing that I wrote and drew. That one, I just wanted to go in a different direction with it. And I used a lot of ink washes and stuff. And it was a lot of artsy things that I wanted to do with it just for my own sake, you know?
So would you call that an experimentation that you're just anxious to do?
Very much so. And it took me a long time, and I'm never going to do it again. It took me way too freaking long. But that was pretty much the way, I don't know, channeling without a lot of outside influences was that project, you know? But it's tough to say. Like Greg said, you wouldn't handle... I want to do a Sergeant Rock project really bad.
We all want that, know? Too.
Okay.
Come on. His father, come on. It has to happen.
And something like that, thank you. Something like that is going to be in a pike down the road. But what I want to do do the same. I don't want to do what my dad did. I can't do what my dad did, you know. I have to go into a different direction. But I already got it up here with the direction I want to go to. So it really depends on the project and what Greg said, the subject matter and all that stuff. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Questions?
Steve, I really liked what you did with the Vendetta series and the Vendetta Apollo X series. Are those characters you're wanting to revisit later?
I mean, I'd gladly revisit them. They have a showcase right now in the Wildstorm, so I think that's definitely where the attention, where they'd like the attention to be at the moment. But I love having them interact with the DC Universe. If there was the opportunity, I would gladly go back. But there's a lot of other places I'd love to go in the DC Universe as well, you know. I've been trying to get... About Midnight at Apollo, I've been trying to weirdly find a way to work Cannon and Saber into books for a long time, because they are the other weirdly kind of long-lived gay couple at DC Comics, and they're even more ridiculous. It's kind of like Tango and Cash if they were... If subtext was super text, you know, or just plain text. So, I would definitely go back. But I also have a lot of other sort of golden geese that I'd like to hunt down as well while I'm working with these folks.
Right, in case everybody didn't hear him, I'm going back with Todd for Spawn 300. Yeah? Oh, thanks. I'm in the middle of last night, but Todd got a hold of me and he said, we're coming on 300 and I really want you to be involved as little or as much as you can be. Because he thinks, he want to make this special. And he goes, I can't think of anything to make it as special as having you come back, because I did so much, as you all know. And so I'm in the midst of this stuff. And I'm a very honest guy, so I'm going to tell you honestly. He offered me a whole lot of money. And so I went to, you know, Dan DiDio, who's the, see, I'm losing my mind because my mind's on money. He's one of the publishers at DC, thank you. And I said, Dan, listen, I know you got to try and move things around schedule-wise a little bit with last night, because I got to do Spawn 300, and it's very cool because they did so much, and he's offering me money. And so Todd and I did an interview for Sci-Fi and at my house. And he's going, yeah, and I buttered Greg up, told my hand to me, and how the much I look. And I go, the reality is what got me is he offered me a lot of money. but you know, that's only half joking, and I do say half joking. But the thing is, I said I have to come back for that, because that really is a cool memento, you know, to come and at issue 300, which he's only the second book now, you know, indie book to make it to that number. In other words, I think Cerebus, I think, did it to 300, and Todd's actually going to beat it because he's going to go past 300. So for me not to be a part of that on some level just seemed wrong. It seems that I should be. I feel like Spawn is partly mine because I did so much of it. And so it started out at least a couple covers, Greg, and do you think you could do even 10 pages? And now I'm doing the full main story with Todd, inking traditionally. So it's going to be as old school as it can be. And I'll tell you, Todd, I've given him like the first 6 pages to start working on, and he's been texting me panels that he's been inking. And it's like then, you know, hour go by and I'll get more texts. I go, it seems like somebody really missed me. He goes, I miss my Greggy. So anyway, 300, I hope you pick it up. It's going to be cool. I did not completely hear this question.
I didn't hear it either.
Cities
you'd
like to explore?
Cities?
Or settings, yeah.
Cities or settings?
What was it?
As far as cities and settings, I hate drawing cityscapes. But my wife loves them, and I hate them, and she thrills when I draw them. But I've always hated drawing them, so I like desertscapes and snowscapes. But I'll tell you, certain things stick with you for a very long time. And when I was in high school, I had an oil painting teacher. And I was doing whatever painting it was, and I'd obviously put a lot of energy into the parts of that painting that I enjoyed and less so in the parts that I didn't enjoy as much. And she said, you have to put as much love into the things that you dislike doing as that you do enjoy doing. And that lesson from back in high school sticks with me. So when I do draw cities, I do put all as much love as I can into it as I do in the things I do enjoy drawing. But yeah, snow and sand. That's it, man.
Yeah, because if you take the shortcuts on cities, they look like crap. I mean, they're hard to draw. Same with drawing cars. I hate drawing cars, especially the wheels and the tires. I can't stand it.
And motorcycles. Let's bring in motorcycles. Yeah. I hate motorcycles. Especially spoke tires. I just have to create modern, futuristic motorcycles. They don't have spokes.
That's why I like doing Gotham City, though, because it's made up. Part of it's made up. And it's like a character unto itself.
Right.
You know? So you could mess around with it. It's not like drawing New York City where it's got to be, right. You know, all the perspective's got to be right and that kind
there's
of stuff.
There's the Pan Am building. There's the Chrysler building.
All that stuff, yeah. And it's got a line all up and stuff. But with Gotham City, you could be all over the place.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't matter.
I'll say I always liked... I did it, but I always, when I got into DC, I wanted to explore more about the city of Vanity, which was from Aztec, which I always liked just because it was designed by N. Stephen Harris, and in the book they would always say that, like, canonically it was the most depressing city in the DC universe. And I'm from Syracuse, so I have some familiarity with depressing cities. And so I felt kinship, but I also just thought that was a very, like, of all the things, like, that you would point out about a place, it's Vanity. This is, like, and also, why would people live there, you know? And so when I was doing, when I was bringing the Ray back in Justice League, I thought it would be a perfect place to bring him. It's the most depressing city in the country, so they need a ray of hope. That's where he should be. And that's why we moved him there. But that was always my big thing I wanted to do. I mean, I wanted to get into Aztec in a variety of ways. We also brought her back in Justice League. But Vanity, I just thought it was super cool, unexplored area in the DC universe. And hopefully we'll be able to go back there as well.
I just have to say, Steve came this close from working with me. All he had to say was snow and sand. And we would have been working together. See? He's that close.
I think anything, and we made up Burnside for our run, and it's like the Brooklyn to Gotham City, and like anything in there is always fun to see them play, like DC still play with, because we like help create it. And I don't know if anyone no one would notice this other than me, but on the trailer for the new Joker on the subway map, there's Burnside on the
I didn't know
map. Yeah, which I was like, so someone super nerdy on the set design team definitely
cool.
Fucking put that in, which was pretty cool.
Okay, anyone else? Yeah.
So DC has a really good way about moving through the past and expanding what they haven't seen yet, also moving this forward, but I'm just kind of curious if you guys like exploring the past or the future, or do you like doing those big events that kind of move forward?
I mean, I'll answer first only because I'm the newbie to DC. I didn't know a lot about DC. I grew up a Marvel guy, and so for me it doesn't matter because it's all brand new to me. So whatever direction I go, it's like doing metal, I got introduced to all these characters I'd never even heard of. So for me, I don't care what direction we go because it's exploration for me. It's all brand new. So for me, it's all a fun ride.
I mean, metal's specifically really cool, though, because it's like it's not frontwards or backwards. It's like sideways.
Yeah.
Going. Yeah. Like, those stories are most interesting to me because I feel like you know those ones and these ones, but, like, the weird branches, like,
yeah.
That stuff's really cool to me.
Yeah, to me, it doesn't matter either, even though I grew up D.C. and not Marvel, but it doesn't matter to me. I'll go any direction.
Or, like, visually, you could tell, like, a modern story and, like, old-timey, like, the Batman, like the the movie... Bruce Timm, thank you. The Bruce Timm movie where it's like old school, but he has all this like modern technology. Like,
I think
playing with visuals and you can keep telling new or old stories. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, go ahead.
I tell you, you guys are not letting me down at all here. I can't even get go
right
fast
here.
Enough.
Yeah, he's ready. Right, he's waiting. He's ready.
You know, Batman has long proteges, sidekicks, whatever. Is your guys' personal? I think I have that
one. Biased.
My personal favorite protege, you know, if Tynan is watching this panel, he really wants me to say Tim Drake. And that does fit for when I was growing up. But I actually, the person that I ended up liking now and I wish I had more time to work with is actually something that you and Scott did because it's Bluebird. And I love her, and I'm kind of sad that she hasn't been around recently, her and her brother. So I should say Tim Drake, because I'm 33, and that's the answer. But my real answer, just because I think she brought something really unique, her and her family, to the Batman family, is Bluebird, and then Bluebird and Cullen, basically.
I would say maybe Duke, because Duke frustrated me the most when I was trying to do him. I don't feel I ever really got a beat on how I wanted to portray him. I think he had a lot of potential to be cool, and I just, he frustrated me endlessly. It was like the most aggravating thing to me, and I don't know why that is. But so if I had a chance to explore, get more of a grip on a character, it would have been him.
Probably Damian. I'd like to work on Damian more. I didn't, you know, even though I co-created him, I still would like to to flesh him out a little more, you know, bring him around a little bit. I'd like to have another run at him. Even though, you know, that miniseries I did dealt with him as Batman of the future, I'd like to continue things with him and have somebody else write it.
Yeah, I can't say it. I can't say what it is yet. It's not a video game. It's going to be comic based on a video game. So we had a meeting about it recently, and it was wild because I sat down with some of the most higher ups, and we all sat in a room and like hashed stuff out for like 5 hours. And I have not done that at DCR. Image, we own it, so like that's what we do it anyways. But I had not worked for a company and had them be that involved, so that made me get really excited about the project because they all care like a whole lot, and that gets me more excited when I'm around that energy, and it's inspiring to be around. So yeah, look out for the announcement soon.
Oh, cute. I gotta start doing that one. Going, so I just finished the last night issue one.
Matt, so you can't say what video game it is. Can you tell us what console it's on? Even the brand?
It's a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a lot of consoles.
A lot? Okay.
That's great.
That should be a good answer for you then. in the white?
I mean, you know, obviously we all want books to be successful, of course, but I think when we started out, and actually almost everyone here was at the New Age Summit, or maybe it's just you and me, Andy, I forget. You were there in spirit, Greg.
I'm sorry.
You were at the New Age of Heroes Summit in spirit. But the thing that they said, and Dan said it when we were there, is that, oh, we want this to be like when Kirby came and he created all these new things.
Oh, right.
You know, the demon and the fourth world and OMAC and so on and so on. And it's just, we want this explosion of new characters. And the thing he even pointed out at the time is that a lot of that stuff was ahead of its time, and it didn't necessarily blow up and was not necessarily super successful when it came out, but it happened and it was in locked in and enriched in the DC universe. And so I think that was the main goal of New Age of Heroes, to have a similar moment where you have this explosion of creativity and new characters, and fully understanding that some may be ahead of their time, some may take a moment to find the right focus and find the right place where they fit in, and that's okay. You know, we're, you know, today we talk about those Kirby creations like royalty, because they are, to me at least. And I think that was the hope with New Age of Heroes. And you see that, you know, some of them are still going, but they are all unique. Like, I mean, when Silencer came out, Silencer was a book I wish that I had thought of, and I wish that I was writing. And now that she's there, maybe I'll have a chance to work with her in the future. The same goes for the characters I created. The same goes for all of these characters, you know, what Rob Venditti did with Damage and so on. And so I think the answer is, yeah, of course I would have liked to write those characters for 5 years, for 6 years. But at the end of the day, they're in the DC universe. They hold unique places in the DC universe. And the excitement for me is to see where they show up next and how they fit into these other books and how they can continue to bounce off and reflect with other characters.
You guys are great. I don't even know who to pick, right there in the front.
I'm just an artist, so I'm the last to always find out, because, you know, the writers go to all these summits, you know, and talk about what they're going to be doing. I haven't heard anything.
I can't answer that because I see that. I have an office up at DC, so.
Oh, yeah, he's got an unfair advantage.
I'll tell you yes.
Oh, there you go. So, see? There we go. And I'll ask him later on and find out. You know, yeah, I haven't heard yet. So, no, my head's in the sand, and I'm going to be pumping.
There are plans.
Okay, there we go. No fair.
My dream character is Wesley Dodd's Sandman, and I think he's a perfect fit for Black Label. Like, one of the first books that I wrote, and it was co-written by my mentor in comics, Steve Siegel, was Sandman Mystery Theater. And I have been trying to find a way to do Sandman Mystery Theater since I came to DC. So I hope that there's a way we can do that. I don't think there's a character better suited for Black Label storytelling. And that look is just classic. So hopefully someday you'll see me. And, I mean, who knows who I would want to do it with. You know, I mean, in my mind, Guy Davis, but I don't know if he's ever coming back. But at Black Label with Sandman, Wesley Dodd's doing some real nightmare storytelling.
I played them. I love them a lot. I think some of the lady character designs are horrible. But I think they're really fun, and fighting in it is really fun, and having an open world, like playing around in Gotham, is really fun. And I've even like screenshotted things and used them to like reference images for drawing my Batgirl pages. Because you've got that whole city already built out, and yeah. Anyway, they're great. I don't know. That's a whole other department other than us. Like, but I hope they keep playing around, because getting to be Batman and playing in those cities are really fun.
I'm way too busy drawing comics to play video games.
I'm with him.
Yeah. But I've seen that because I got a kid at home who plays it, you know. He plays a lot of games, but yeah, so I've seen it. It looks badass and it's cool, and I've walked in on it and go, wow, that's awesome. I wish I had a life. Was what more or less?
Zero Year
is a pain in my ass. Scott Snyder at that time didn't realize what he was giving to his creative team. I have since schooled him. So he was murdering us. Not only because he would just add more and more pages to a script, but all these scenes would be so labor intensive, and it'd be one labor intensive scene after another labor intensive scene, and we're just he wore us all out. And so at that point, I started sitting him down, and I'd go, buddy. You know, if you kill an artist on this page, you got to give him a little bit of time to recoup here and regain ground, because we do have deadlines over here. And he didn't understand no concept. So I used to draw pages, and I would turn them in with notes. This is why this took me forever, and this is why this I could do in a day and keep the deadline. So I started educating him so he could see what it looks like. And then I told him, I go, what you don't know is all of us who've worked with you, Jim Lee, me, Murphy, all these people behind his back, we're plotting on how to kill you and not get caught. And he would say to me, he'd go, and I got the scene where, Jim was telling me, and he throws every single Batmobile ever made at him, and he goes, that's cool, right? And Jimmy goes, what is wrong with him?
So mean.
Anyway, Scott is much more user-friendly now. And so he understands, and he always promises, I will never do to you guys what I did on Zero Year ever again. I promise. But I'm very proud of the way it came out. But it was certainly the most labor-intensive thing we underwent together as an art team.
Zero Year is actually my favorite from your run, along with Super Heavy.
Oh, thanks, man. Super Heavy. Thank you.
So
yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I give a lot of credit to our colorist FCO, Palencia, about the success of Zero Year, because Scott early on wanted something really fresh color-wise, not what you're typically used to seeing in pages of Batman. And so he was, using the reference to, neon punk rock kind of stuff. And so when we started telling FCO that's what we were going for, he was timidly going, is this okay? And we'd go, that's awesome, keep going. And pretty soon he opened up and just went nuts. And so Zero Year's look is in large part due to FCO pushing the boundaries of color in that book, and it's just fantastic. I think he's brilliant. So anyway, glad you liked it.
We got time for one more, guys, so make it a good one.
You name Swamp Thing. Well, I'll tell you the story. I got to draw that brief moment with Swamp Thing, and I just fell in love with it, because who doesn't like monsters, right? And so I get Dan to Dio, and I go, Dan, I want to do a Swamp Thing book. He goes, okay, I'll give you anything you want. Come on to dinner with the deal, we'll have a discussion. And so we go out to dinner. And he sits me down, and he gives me a long pitch on how he would give me Swamp Thing, but he would prefer that I do Wonder Woman. And so after we got done, I go, okay, yeah, all right, I can see you doing Wonder Woman. And he goes, and to make you happy, he goes, if you could do me like a Swamp Thing covers, and I don't have a Swamp Thing book, but I'll make a book around your covers. And I turned in my first Swamp Thing cover, and he goes, calls me up to go, I need you to do me Swamp Thing book. So it was that quick. So I would love to do a Swamp Thing book. Scott already has a Swamp Thing story in mind that we can do that. The thing is, we're at a place right now, Scott and I, where we're really trying to figure out what direction to go. Because the thing is, I want to do that, and I would love to do Wonder Woman even. 2 minutes, we're getting the hook in 2 minutes. So I'll just say quickly, Scott and I have a lot of creator-owned ideas that we want to do. And so we're trying to figure out where we slot this in. Because we're doing Last Night. Scott and I also have one super mega event planned for DC. We have all this creator-owned ideas. And Scott even has ideas for Marvel. He has one with a Captain America, Wolverine, Ghost Rider team up, and another Hulk story, which is called Hulk Smash Everything. And so, yeah, sounds cool, right? And so we're just going, where do we go next? What do we do next? And he's 15 years younger than me, so he's going to run me right into the ground and keep going. So I'm going, how can we do this, as many of these things as we want, and in what order we do them in? So I would love to do Swamp Thing. That'd be, oh, I would love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yay! I don't know about you guys. I could do this all day. And you guys, they did not lie to me. Seriously, the best questions I've gotten on any panel I have done. You did not disappoint me. I want you guys to keep it loud. Let's thank our artist and our writer here. Bab Starr. Yeah. Steve Orlando. Greg Capullo. Oh. And Andy Cooper. Thank you guys so much. You're wonderful.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.